Okay, John, I think we're ready. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity for NIMS to give this presentation on our initial views on annual catch limits and accountability measures and to conduct a scoping presentation here today. After today, we have one more council, the Mid-Atlantic, and then we will have given this presentation for all eight fishery management councils, and we also had a scoping session in Silver Spring. And let me confirm what Pat was saying earlier, Pat Kirkle, about the mixed stock exception advice. That interim advice is in the letter. I don't remember the date, but we can certainly get copies for folks. But that was intended as interim advice for the mixed stock exception issue because of the new requirements under the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorized Act related to ending overfishing. And that's certainly an issue that we're looking at. And if you have comments on that or any other related National Standard 1 issue during scoping or later, we're interested in that too. I think most people are familiar with the fact that we have new ending overfishing requirements as a result of the Magnuson-Stevens Act being reauthorized. And we're dealing more specifically with the annual catch limits and the accountability measures in this presentation and not some of the more, well, I wouldn't say minor features, but I think these are the ones we have to deal with in terms of getting some guidance out through the National Standard 1 guidelines by the end of this year. So this, in a way, this one slide repeats what Dan said, but it's worth saying again that the annual catch limits and accountability measures will need to be implemented by fishing year 2010 for stocks undergoing overfishing, and we think that might mean stocks undergoing overfishing in 2009 versus right now, but we have to run that by NIMS leadership and see if that's the way they want to deal with that issue. We'll have clarification on that probably in the proposed rule. Some of our thinking was that the list of stocks undergoing overfishing right now could be quite a bit different than the list of stocks undergoing overfishing in 2009, and that would be more appropriate to try to deal with those stocks at that time that are undergoing overfishing, and in other words, try to end overfishing in 2010. And then for 2011, actually all the fisheries, rather than all other fisheries, would be subject to the need for ACL and accountability measures to the extent possible. So NIMS has an initial view, and that's all it is at this point, is an initial view in order to start working through these issues and start trying to develop some ideas for the guidance as to how to deal with an annual catch limit and make it more likely that it will work and that it would end overfishing or it would prevent overfishing. So what we've come up with in the notice of intent stage is something called an overfishing level. And it's not identified in the act, but it's essential, we think, for developing accountability measures and monitoring ACL performance. If we go with an OFL in later stages of this guidance, it would be an annual numerical amount of catch that would result in overfishing if exceeded, whereas the annual catch limit in a sense would be more of a target. It would be an annual numerical target catch level, and that it would be set below the OFL, the overfishing level, to ensure that overfishing does not occur. So if we continue with this concept, as I said, later on in the proposed rule, for instance, and even farther down the road in a final rule, we would have a difference or a distance or another word is a buffer between the overfishing level and the annual catch limit. So to accurately compare annual catch limits and overfishing levels, they need to contain the same criteria. And based on our preliminary interpretation, these criteria would be needed for an ACL and OFL, or criterion factors. They would be set for each managed fishery stock to the extent we can perform that. They can be set for multiple year periods. That's right out of the wording in the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorized Act. They would be numerical annual values set in weight or numbers of fish. And they would include all sources of fishing mortality wherever possible. And we're also thinking in the initial stages that ACLs could be subdivided into sector ACLs. For instance, a commercial or recreational sector, or three or four gear types in a commercial fishery. So we could subdivide, we think, an ACL, but we're not of the initial thinking you would subdivide an OFL. An OFL would stay at the stock level. And we think, in a sense, this would have a better chance of preventing overfishing, but that you'd have to have accountability measures associated with the sector ACLs to try to address each one of them and keep them in check so that they are not exceeded, because that would present other problems. And we do have some challenges, as you know, for one, recreational fisheries. So we're thinking accountability measures would be basically management measures. Two basic types, they would be preventive in-season management actions, such as in-season actions that would lower a trip limit, or an in-season action that would close a fishery, or a corrective management actions, which would be, for instance, an overage payback in a subsequent fishing year. Again, we think these measures should be established for each fishery or stock. So what are the issues and concerns about sector allocations? And I alluded to it a moment ago that if one of your sectors has a lot of data come in later, so to speak, and you realize you exceeded the ACL by a lot, but your other two sectors haven't reached their ACLs yet, but overall you're in the danger zone in terms of reaching your OFL, and you have data in season to deal with the issue, you might have to close the fishery. So you'd have to deal with the sector that had the ACL that was exceeded with an accountability measure that currently was set up with that fish stock in that sector, or you might have to change it in a subsequent year, depending on what the issue was that caused the subdivided sector ACL to be exceeded. I'm not going to get into this earlier preliminary alternatives that we had in the NOI, but we're already starting to talk about alternatives that could deal with how do you give guidance on a buffer if we keep the buffer concept, or how do you deal with ACLs and setting ACLs for data poor stocks versus data rich stocks. And there's other things we're currently discussing, but we want to have some initial alternatives discussion wise that we can bring to NIMS leadership near the end of April, after we've looked at all the comments we receive on the notice of intent for these ACLs and AMs. Given that the knowledge and management of stocks is imperfect and uncertain, what is the level of risk of overfishing that would be tolerated in designing ACL and AM mechanisms? Well, it seems like we would want to have that in our guidance. And we're certainly interested in what you think about that and what you think the risk of overfishing should be. For data-rich stocks, for instance, do we want to allow a problem setting an ACL and an associated OFL with a 20% chance of overfishing, 10%, 30%, 50%? Should we have guidance on that? So far, I think we're of the mind that we should, but we want to hear from the councils, the stakeholders, and the public on that. And we also want to hear from you on what frequency and amount of overfishing would indicate that an ACL and or AM mechanism are ineffective and must be revised. Should we have guidance on that? If we do, frequency might mean if it occurs once in terms of overfishing occurring, is that enough where we need to change the mechanisms? Or would it be 1 out of 3 years or 1 out of 5 years that it occurred? And for the amount, what if we had an OFL that was exceeded by 20% or 50% or 75% or whatever? Do we want to have guidance that says after this has happened once or twice or whatever the case may be number-wise as far as the guidance, we need to change the ACL and AM mechanisms? So some of the key factors in designing and implementation of ACLs and AMs are the management and regulatory approach in place right now, the historical success or failure of that management or regulatory approach, the way the fishery is conducted in terms of monitoring catch data and how quickly the catch data available is available for the managers. And the variation in the scientific knowledge of the stocks. So all these factors we think combined would affect fisheries management success and the feasibility of designing the ACLs and the AMs, and they could affect that buffer, the difference between the OFL and the ACL. So sort of a wrap-up question, but just one of many questions we could probably come up with on some of those previous slides. Given the variability in managing the target catch levels, where should the ACL be set in relation to the OFL? If we look at an example where we have 3 management approaches and we have 5 years worth of catch data compared to a target catch for each one of them, if we looked at the 2 extremes, management approach 1 versus management approach 3, in management approach 1, we had 5 years in a row or recent years of catch data that all hovered around the target, but they were very close to it, and some or all the time they didn't really even exceed the target. Maybe that would be an IFQ fishery sometimes. The management approach 3 would be an example where we had a lot of variation in the catch, and it was often above the target and sometimes exceeded the target by quite a bit. And again, just an initial view, but we're thinking if we are approaching the buffer and how to deal with it, and people want to keep the current management approach they have, then one way to try to give guidance as to how to set the buffer would be to look at this kind of data, recent catches compared to the target, and then recommend how to deal with the buffer. So we're thinking that if the catch level varied greatly and was usually larger than the target, then it would be a scenario of management approach 2 or 3 where the buffer or the difference between the ACL and the overfishing level would be larger than it would for a management approach like in number 1 where the OFL and the ACL were, well, I should say where the target and the catch levels for 5 years were very close together. In that case, the buffer would be very small, we think, between the ACL or OFL. So another issue is the scientific knowledge of the stocks varies greatly around the country. We have quality of catch data that varies. The completeness of the catch data varies in terms of some stocks. We have good landings and discards data. And some stocks, for some stocks, we have landings data only or no discards. And in other cases, we have little or no catch data at all. So how in the world are we going to set ACLs and AMs for those stocks? The precision of catch data estimates, that varies in terms of our confidence intervals around those estimates sometimes or the statistical methods used. There are many different data collection methods used, and each may have some different data quality issues associated with them, so we have to keep that in mind. Other factors associated with scientific knowledge variation for the different stocks. For some of the stocks, as you know, we have good knowledge on the biomass and the fish and mortality estimates. And for some stocks, we have fairly good proxies, we think. And in a lot of cases, we have very little knowledge of the biomass or the fish and mortality estimate. And another related item for stock status. How about, is the stock subject to overfishing? Is it overfished? Is it approaching overfished? In a lot of cases, we have what's called known stock status. We have a yes or no answer, and in some of those cases, we're very confident of that answer. In some cases, we're not as confident. A lot of cases, unfortunately, we don't have a known stock status for overfished or overfishing. And in some cases, we still have some overfished or overfishing definitions that aren't described. They're still undefined. And a couple of other areas where our knowledge of stock varies greatly is in the existence of other academic research and the existence of anecdotal information. So more than anything here, in a lot of cases with these slides, we're just making you aware that we realize this is going to be a tough job. We're all in it together. Whether it's the councils or it's the Atlantic highly migratory species in the case of the secretary, Atlantic highly migratory species has some stocks for which we have a good bit of data and many stocks that are data poor. Another issue is the timeliness of catch data varies. In some cases, we have good catch data within season for which we could make, and in some cases already are making in-season adjustments. In a lot of other cases, we don't have catch data available till right near the end of the fishing year or sometime early the following fishing year, and in some cases, it lags much more than that. And again, in some cases, we have very little or no catch data at all. So a couple of questions that come out of this, for instance, are for stocks with little or no data, how could ACLs and AMs be developed? And for fisheries where catch data is not timely or does not exist, what types of accountability measures can be developed? So again, development of national annual catch limit and an accountability measure guidance must account for diversity in the fisheries. We have 530 stocks that are included in the annual report to Congress on the status of fisheries. We have stocks within that list that are about 1 year in terms of their life cycle and stocks that take much, much longer to mature. Or some stocks in the Southeast start out as females and turn over to males at a later point in their life cycle. That's just a few examples of how the biology is different. And certainly you're aware of the management approaches and how different they are even within your council, depending on the stock, whether it's deep sea red crab or sea scallops or New England ground fish. And again, our monitoring capabilities for these various fisheries varies greatly, and the scientific information that's available. So for the estimated implementation timeline, as we finish this first phase, the scoping phase, with a common period ending date of April 17th, now we're going to get into the real meaty part of this process when we prepare an environmental assessment or a DEIS, and we prepare a proposed rule and issue both of them around July of 2007. And this is a real ambitious schedule. You're familiar, being on the council, how difficult it is to undertake an EIS, for instance, on a short schedule like this with something out by the end of the year. But we don't have much choice. We really have to have guidance out for the councils and HMS in the case of Atlantic highly migratory species by the end of this year, in order for the councils and HMS to use the guidance in 2008 and part of 2009, if the councils make any revisions to their FMPs to better align them with any of the guidance that we come up with on ACLs and AMs. And so, as Dan said earlier, we need probably roughly the last 6 months of 2009 in order to deal with secretary review and implementation. And so we think to kind of relate to this timeline, it would be better for the councils to just deal with their FMPs all at once in terms of the stocks within them, to be better prepared if the stocks undergoing overfishing in 2009 turn out to be the ones that we're more concerned about versus the ones that are undergoing overfishing right now. Again, we have to talk about that more within the agency, and we're interested in your comments on that issue as well. But we would have some clarification, I would think, on that issue by the time of the proposed rule and the supporting analyses. So NIMS is seeking comments on the ACLs and the AMs and various aspects of them, many of which I've mentioned today and many of which we didn't mention that you may think of or that we have started talking about since we first put this scoping presentation together. And keep in mind that although we're trying to limit the scope of this document to guidance mostly on ACLs and AMs, if you think there are other related NS1 guideline issues like the mixed stock exception or other items that need to be addressed during this process, then we need to know that because it's possible, quite possible, that there will be other aspects of NS1 that we cannot put off till a later date. So I think we can open it up for questions.
Thank you. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have read all of this, and I've pored over it, and I seem to understand it, but I'm unclear on two aspects of this. First of all, OFL seems to me to be another way of saying MSY. And the second thing is ACL seems to be somehow related to OY, optimum yield, but now today it appears to me that that isn't exactly true. ACL seems to be a safe way of approaching MSY without going over it and has no relation to OY, or what's the relationship here?
That's something we are working on right now. We didn't have it ready for the NOI, and we want to run that by NIMS leadership as well, and I think ACL is more closely associated with OY, and OFL is more closely associated with MSY, but Galen, you might have something to add to that.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Preble. You're right in seeing the relationship between the concept of MSY and what we're calling the overfishing level. MSY, as you know, is defined as a long-term average yield from the fishery. What we're calling the overfishing level would typically be derived by multiplying the limit mortality rate, FMSY, mm-hmm. times the estimate of biomass for the year that the limit was being set for. So it's an annual level that's established, but it differs only in that MSY would be a long-term average of those annual amounts.
So just to make sure I've got this now, what you're looking for is greater resolution, basically MSY with greater resolution, or would it have less resolution? I can't quite get a grip on that.
One of the I hope this will answer your question. One of the issues that we have in stocks all around the country is that for many stocks, we do stock assessments only periodically, and overfishing is determined in a backwards-looking mode of doing an assessment that looks at data that may be a year or two old and determines whether overfishing was occurring based on that data set. We do have some fisheries in which they currently use this concept of establishing an annual level in advance that corresponds to that overfishing limit and then managing to it One of the advantages that we see to using this approach wherever we can is that it gives us an annual indicator of whether the management measures are succeeding or not. Now, a subsequent stock assessment might change the retrospective look, and that can always happen. But if we have this amount that we're aiming our management measures toward, and we're successful in keeping our total catch and bycatch to that limit, then we can say that our management measures have worked adequately, they've worked as planned. If, on the other hand, we find that the catches exceed this limit level, then that gives us immediately, or at least on an annual basis, it gives us an indication that there's something that we need to correct, rather than perhaps waiting 3 or 4 years for the next stock assessment to tell us there's a problem. So I think that shortening up the giving us an annual view of the success of our measures is one of the primary reasons for going to the annual OFL.
If you bear with me a second, just so then on an OFL, using that concept, I understand what you're saying there. If you have a data poor fishery, then it would seem to me that there's greater danger of exceeding it, and you'd have to go with a lower ACL in that circumstance. Is that basically where we're going here? I think that's what I'm getting out of this.
That's one of the things that we're looking at, is how to factor in, appropriately factor in uncertainty. And if you have a data poor fishery, or you're less, or you have a fishery where there's more uncertainty about either the FMSY level itself or uncertainty in the management measures and its ability to hit a target, that the more uncertainty you have, the more conservative you need to be in your target setting.
And last question, then OY is more of an economic concept, and I, from what you're saying now, I see less linkage between that and ACL than I did when I asked the question. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe that would be consistent with my understanding as well. I think OY is, a long-term average objective for the fishery. I think there is a very clear tie between the working backwards from the mandate in the Act to prevent overfishing. Then there becomes a linkage between where you want OY to be and how successfully you can manage your fishery to achieve the target. Because if you have a fishery that's subject to management measures that can predictably achieve its target, then you can logically set your OY level closer to the limit and be certain that you won't exceed the limit. So I think there's a linkage between the type of management and how well you're able to hit your fisheries target and where OY can be set relative to the limit level.
Thank you.
Dr. Pierce.
Thanks for all the efforts you've put into the presentation. I know this is a difficult challenge. I've been struggling with it myself for quite a long time as part of my work on behalf of my agency to put together some constructive comments in response to the Federal Register announcement. And I'm indeed struggling to put together some constructive comments because there's a lot proposed and there are a lot of questions asked, and we're attempting to provide you with some answers that would reflect our opinions as to which way we feel we would like you to go. Questions, for example, that relate to the mixed stock exception. I'm not going to get into that here. You'll see those points made in our comments that we'll submit to you, hopefully by the deadline. I guess by the deadline, I'd rather be working on the comments today, tomorrow, and the day after, as opposed to being here. But then again, this is important business. Now, I'm struggling to deal with the jargon, the change in jargon. We're obviously very much used to working with terms such as F-threshold and F-target. Those have been the the expressions we've used for a long time now to determine overfishing, for example. When are we overfishing and when are we not? And now we've shifted over to some other proposed acronyms such as, you know, the OFL, and, of course, ACL, with ACL being specified within the reauthorization. I've come to the conclusion, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and I hope you will. It seems to me that what I have before me is some guidance. There's a question in here. There's some guidance being provided to us that, of course, is really more than guidance. The national standard guidelines go far beyond just general guidance. We're held to what is actually in national standard guidelines. We know that because of the lawsuits that have been filed over the years, always based on national standard guidelines, the national standards and their guidelines. The question is this. Are you proposing, is the service proposing guidance to the councils that will force management strategies that are far more restrictive than congressional intent? For example, you've acknowledged that you've created the acronym OFL, the overfishing level. And frankly, I thought from my reading of the reauthorization that Congress intended the OFL to be the ACL, the acceptable catch level. Anything above the ACL, you're overfishing. Anything below, you're not overfishing. So that's the first question. Are you, in effect, proposing to do something that is more restrictive than congressional intent?
Thanks, Dr. Pierce. I don't think so. I think we may understand the congressional intent a bit differently. The language in the Act says that the annual catch limits need to be established to ensure that overfishing does not occur. That's a fairly simple statement. Understanding exactly what it means, what the implications are, is, you know, where, you know, there's room for discussion there. It's been our view that Congress intended us to be pretty firm about ending overfishing, and we've had the requirement that overfishing be ended in its current form for a little over 10 years, and we still have a fairly significant number of our managed stocks that are listed as subject to overfishing. So we want our guidelines to be effective in meeting the congressional objective that overfishing be ended. We don't want the guidelines to be any more restrictive than they need to be to accomplish that goal.
Okay, thank you for that response. And a related question would be, especially in light of what you just said, is the service proposing, with all good intent, to use the reauthorization to institute the National Marine Fisheries Service approach for precautionary fisheries management by building in all these buffers, by requiring through guidelines, precautionary action? I'm not saying it's bad. Not at all. I'm just trying to get a clear indication as to what, you know, the service is attempting to do. And so that's my question. Is this the service's use of the reauthorization to, in a very formal way, institute the service's precautionary management approach?
Thank you, Dr. Pierce. I don't think at this point that we have the objective of using this as a vehicle to institute a particular precautionary approach. We have been looking at a lot of the thinking in terms of how to deal with uncertainty that also went into development of the Restrepo document and other things like that. One of the things that we're looking for in terms of how to deal with data poor stocks is an effective approach to meet the objective of Congress to prevent overfishing for stocks where the actual overfishing level is not currently known. And I think that inevitably leads you to looking at things from a risk assessment type of standpoint, and that may appear to be similar or involve some of the same thinking as what's commonly called the precautionary approach. But I think as we work through the concepts through our science working group in terms of how to adequately incorporate uncertainty into our guidelines, and as we deal with all the public comments that we get, some of this will shake out. But, yeah, we're definitely have those kinds of principles in view of what we're looking at doing here.
Okay, one final question, at least for now. In your presentation, you described the accountability measures, which, of course, we must develop as part of all of our fisheries management plans and amendments. And I notice that you indicate, again, in the presentation, two basic types of accountability measures. This is on page 8 of your, well, it's page 8 of the handout that we were given. Actually, I get this off the web. Two basic types of management measures established with ACLs to end and prevent overfishing, the AMs. Now, you describe the types as being, number one, preventive in-season management actions, and the other one is corrective management actions. And then very specifically, you give two examples. I've struggled with this myself. In other words, what are appropriate AMs? What can we consider? But you indicate as your examples, very specific examples, in-season fishery closure, if the target catch limit has been reached, that would be the one example relating to preventive in-season management actions. And then the other would be an overage payback in the next fishing year, which relates to the corrective management actions. So I read those examples and immediately I'm led to believe that you indeed are thinking principally relative to the ACLs, hard TACs. And this gets to the question I raised before about our ACLs, hard TACs, and I was told not necessarily, but I'm given the impression that the service's thinking is very heavily, well, you're leaning towards hard TACs. That's the question. Is that what your thinking is at this point in time? Then in all likelihood, ACLs will be hard TACs.
Well, Dr. Pierce, I think we have a very open mind about this at this point. The use of those two particular examples in our document as we're putting the presentation together, hard TACs are well understood to be an effective way to control fishery mortality within a limit. And so it's an obvious example for us to give if people are wondering what do we mean by the idea of an in-season accountability measure. To implement hard TACs requires you to have a certain degree of timeliness and accuracy in the data that you have available. And one of the parallel things that we need to be doing, in addition to just the ACL guidelines per se, is looking at the information systems that are available for commercial catch, recreational catch, and bycatch to improve those over the intervening years and continue to improve them. But you as councils are going to have to develop systems of accountability measures that will work with the data that you have available. So we're not assuming that we would be able to, even if it was desired, that we would be able to implement hard TACs in every fishery. It may be impossible to collect the kind of data that would be necessary to do that effectively. I think it makes sense for councils to really look at the data they have available and see what's the best use you can make of those data to meet the overall objectives, which is to prevent overfishing. And at this point, you know, we haven't made any decisions about that. Certainly, if there are ways to construct fishery management measures and accountability measures to prevent overfishing that don't involve what's typically called a hard tack, that may very well be acceptable. In the corrective measures, it's the term we coined really just to refer to things that don't happen in season but happen in a subsequent year. That concept partly exists because we recognize that in some fisheries we won't have information to do in season type actions, and the only option that may be available is some kind of appropriate target versus the limit on an annual basis, and then when the data do become available, making whatever adjustments appropriate in a subsequent year. The inclusion of the overage payback as an example was because that was a specific example that Congress had had on their table at one point in one of the earlier bills. They generalized the language when they finally passed it to just say accountability measures, but it was pretty clear to us that an overage payback was a concept that they were associating with accountability measures. Certainly not to imply that we think that that's a necessary provision to have or even the best one. It was just an example. We knew that people had heard about the overage payback concept, and we wanted to show them how it would fit into our scheme.
Thank you.
That's it, Dr. Pierce? No? Okay. Paul Howard.
Mark, one of your slides talks about allocating to different sectors and holding the sectors accountable with ACLs for each sector and accountability measures. I think what that does is it leaves the public and the council with the expectation that NIMS can implement that type of system of, you know, maybe having five or six different sectors and keeping track of quota and OFLs and ACLs and everything else that we would need to manage in terms of catch accurately reported for six different areas in one fishery or better. And it also would give us the expectation that the scientists would have enough discard data to determine catch in time to meet these requirements by 2010 and 11. And in this region, I think I'm very safe to say that we don't have near the money needed, the funding to have accurate discard data to determine catch, and we don't have near the funding or personnel to accurately keep track of catch, total catch, the way the system is now. So the point is that we need much more money, not only to develop the plans, but much more money to do what you've given us the expectation that NIMS can accomplish with accurately determining catch, discards, and also record keeping for that. So there's a huge issue of funding that I don't want to go by the board. And to my knowledge, no one's come to the councils or the regions to say, how are you going to implement these and keep track of these landings without any funding? And if we're not going to have funding available, that would lead the managers to developing different measures. If, in fact, we can't keep track, we don't have annual landings now, annual catch limits. 19 groundfish stocks, maybe a handful have VPAs. The rest are index funds that we don't do, even targets. So we're going to have to address annual catch limits on those, whiting, skates, seven skate species. It's a whole bunch of work to do and a whole lot of funding needed to really implement this right. And I don't want that message to be, left behind.
I think you're right. You know, if you don't have the ability to do it just yet, then that's certainly the advice you want to give back to the public if they're proposing to go that route and have subdivided sector ACLs. Over in the North Pacific, they have regulatory areas, Western, Central, Eastern, and they close each of those areas or change trip limits according to how far along the directed fishery is in the season. And they do have some breakdowns of the commercial fishery by year in a couple instances in North Pacific. So I think what we're saying with that slide is we foresee that we would want to have the ability to subdivide our sectors if the system already had something like that and it's been working pretty well. Then again, on the other hand, if you have the recreational fishery issue that especially the Mid-Atlantic and Southeast have, and to a lesser degree you guys have and other councils, we certainly have to think about that issue too and hope the MRI that we're going to come up with, the Marine Recreational Index instead of MRFs, would be a big enough improvement to help.
Paul, if I could stick on my program manager hat a little bit here. I think you've raised a very good point. And we've struggled with this a bit in terms of the chicken and egg issue here, in that how can we cost out and project what it will take us in 2010 and beyond to implement these measures when we haven't developed the guidelines, and so you don't know what the guidelines will look like. Once you have the guidelines, then you can develop some measures, and it'll be easier to cost them out. But as you accurately point out, knowing whether or not there might be certain capabilities in the future that may not exist now might change how you implement the measures and might appropriately even change what guidelines we have. I don't have a really good solution to this kind of have to do A before B, but B before A. But I think the best we can do is we are building in some claims or a case for additional resources as we head into our 2010 program plans, which we're working on right now, through the Fishery Management Program and the Ecosystem Observation Program, which is the science side, for money for management, money for improvements in data collections. And as we engage in the next few weeks with NIMS leadership through the regulatory board, through the NIMS Leadership Council, which is coming up, and then in a few weeks we'll be meeting with the council chairs in New Orleans. And I think we can use those discussions as a way to kind of bootstrap this up and figure out at least an initial estimate of what kinds of resources we might need to look for heading into 2010 and at least get something on the table, even if we can't build it on a really well-defined plan yet.
Phil Rohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I get a little confused and a little concerned, so I think I'll preface it with, I guess beauty is somewhat in the eye of the beholder. That's pretty much recognized. So as I go through this and what I see here is a lot of work being done and we're heading there, but I go to what Dr. Pierce was hitting on before. When you look at the list of accountability measures that are prescribed, what I have to wonder is whether the emphasis of this whole thing right now is addressing overfishing. But in the accountability measures portion of this, what jumps up at me is the flip of that. What do you do under accountability for achieving OI?
Thanks, Phil. And we expect that we will get quite a bit of comment in our comment period about these questions about what's the relationship of annual catch limits to achieving OY. how does it relate to existing concepts that are used in some places of allowable biological catch and TAC and all that. And at this point, I don't know how, I don't know whether the issue of the OY definition or guidelines pertaining to OY may end up needing to be addressed in this ACL provision as well. My current thinking is that it probably won't need to be directly addressed, but if there are too many issues right now related to the way OYs are defined and the types of provisions in this action that are necessary to prevent overfishing, it's possible that within the broader range of National Standard 1 guidelines that some of those issues may come into play.
Sally?
Yeah, this was somewhat raised earlier. Page 8 of your presentation, accountability measures, the two types, preventive in season. That one got my attention for two reasons, and I know you've already addressed it to some degree, but I just need to raise it because it was highlighted to me in your presentation. First, that you used the term target catch limit, and I think everyone here in this region knows that target tax have been something that, while we have them in our management plans with no accountability measures associated with them, there have been some significant failures in preventing overfishing from occurring. So using that language, target catch limits, is something that is a red flag for me and a concern as we're trying to move forward in this region in terms of implementing what the new Magnuson requirements are. So that term target catch limits is a concern. Also, just, and I know that this was addressed already to some degree, but I just have to raise it, when you're talking about preventive in-season management actions, and you say your example is the in-season fishery closure if the target catch limit has been reached, well, I wouldn't consider that preventive. I would say that you would want a preventive measure to be doing something before you actually got to the limit. Thank you.
Thanks. I think one of the things that we're running into is this presentation was created as a national scoping presentation. And as we move around the country, we find that the words that we use in the presentation are words that are also used in particular councils with subtly different meanings. And so don't read too much into that. We weren't thinking of how does the New England Council think of a target when we use the term target. But there is a general concept that we've been working with in the NIMS science world for quite a while now of limits and targets. And limits are values that are not to be exceeded, and targets are used as the aiming point for your management measures. And the idea that targets are set below limits is where it comes into play, that depending on how accurately you're able to hit your target with whatever combination of your management measures and regulations, as well as the limitations of the data that are available to you, you might have very effective regulatory measures, but with very poor data, you have problems actually hitting your target. So the idea is that you have a management target, which you will achieve with some degree of accuracy. And the goal is to have that target set appropriately so that once the dust settles, the limit will not be exceeded.
And I do appreciate that you have a wide audience that you're presenting this to. And for that reason, I think it's important to appreciate what the regional context might be and how the work that you're doing might be further interpreted here to make sure that it's not misinterpreted based on how different terminology is used here as compared to how you might be using it in a scientific realm or on a national scale.
Certainly, and I just want to say that I think that that's one of the key things that we can benefit from the comments of from this council as well as the other particular councils is really highlight for us any issues that you have over the terminology because we're not as familiar with the particular ways that you use the terms.
Okay, I'm going to go to the audience unless someone on the council hasn't spoken on this issue. Dave.
Thank you. I had a couple questions. The first one was that most of this seems to be geared towards single species. And I wondered if you had any thoughts on how you were going to overlay the ecosystem approach to how we might deal with these instead of on a single species basis.
We haven't given a whole lot of thought to the ecosystem approach, but we certainly are aware that we have species groups, stock assemblages, stock complexes around the country that currently have a TAC. And, we're hearing from those folks right now, whether they're the regional administrator or the assistant regional administrator or the council. So although we don't know for sure, it seems like we're going to have something like that in the guidelines to help deal with that, to make sure that it makes sense, but that we preserve some right, depending on how the stock complex is set up or whatever, so we can have something other than just single stock every time. And that's going to be one possible way we'll deal with the data poor issue.
Okay. My second question was on your timeline, and it's more just a question because I don't know the answer. After you've finished this up, do you report it back to Congress? Does Congress get another bite at the apple? I mean, they were great at throwing all these words out here with no definitions. Do you go back to them and then say, here's our definitions, do you agree? Or do you just, you're basically, what you say is final?
I fully believe or expect that we're going to hear from congressional staff at the point of a proposed rule. And I wouldn't be surprised if we hear from them for comments on the NOI as well. I don't know if we're going to plan to meet with them, Galen, or not, but that's possible too.
If they want.
Yeah.
Okay, and my last isn't a question. It's more just a comment on the final document. It would be immensely helpful to me personally, and I think to most of the council people, if when you say something can or cannot be done, you provide a rationale, a why, and an example. And again, you keep hearing from us, you've heard it from several people about this mixed stock exemption. We've gotten guidance on it several times over the time I've been on the council, and it's basically, well, you can't use it because we say so. There's not, what I'd like to know is, if it meets X, Y, and Z, you can do it. If it meets W, V, and U, you can't. And have it be as specific as possible so that we're not, going ahead and doing something in good faith only to have somebody rule later on that, well, you couldn't do that. It would make all of our jobs, I think, a lot simpler. Thank you.
I think that's a good comment.
Okay, I'm going to go to the audience. Anyone in the audience? Dave Brewer.
Thank you. I didn't hit it hard enough. David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. I remember about 2 years after the SFA was implemented, Senator Snow sent a letter to NIMS in shock about how NIMS ended up implementing SFA and all the extra restrictions that were imposed. I would say to Mr. Pierce, Mr. Rule, stick to your guns. There is in the Act no requirement for a buffer zone. you already have a buffer between targets and thresholds, for instance, do you add another buffer just because you get a new law? The Act speaks of setting annual catch limits for a fishery, not for each stock of fish. Does that mean you have to have 530 separate catch limits? Does that mean that the mixed stock exception can't apply anymore? It's not clear from the law. The law doesn't provide that. In the development of the annual catch limit from the beginning of the congressional process to the end, you see more and more flexibility added through successive iterations of the bill. At one point, there was a payback provision. There's not a payback provision in the final bill. NIMS shouldn't be able to say, well, you know, they just made that a shorthand. They took it out. It wasn't in the House bill. It wasn't in the Senate bill. It didn't end up in the final bill. There are other places where, again, the councils should have the flexibility, because the law has gotten increasingly general, to be able to employ the management regimes that have been used in the council to continue to manage the fisheries. This requires some level of ensuring that that overfishing isn't occurring. But if you have stocks that are being managed sustainably, you shouldn't need dramatic new conservation cuts here. It's not what the law requires. We'll submit detailed comments to the to NIMS on some of these details of the 10 questions that have been asked. Again, the issue of this overfishing limit is a new concept that NIMS has created as a buffer zone that's not in the law. There are concerns about variability in the data. That's kind of odd thing to say when you're decommissioning the Albatross, and for instance for the scallop survey, not yet providing for another federal survey. There should be flexibility in whatever guidance the councils get from these guidelines to handle discards. There should be no one-size-fits-all requirement that all discards need to be counted. That's not in the law. Again, it doesn't say in the law that a payback provision is required to ensure accountability. Accountability can simply mean make sure it doesn't happen again. Again, the payback provision was taken out in the final bill. I don't want to monopolize all the time, but these are some of the issues that we're concerned about. Some of the issues we'll be commenting on, and I hope that the councils do look closely at this and stick to their guns, because, again, if history is a guide, you don't want to end up with something that Congress didn't expect and you clearly don't want.
John Williamson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Williamson for the Ocean Conservancy, and thank you for the opportunity to make comment on these developing guidelines. The Ocean Conservancy National Fishery Team will be providing more detailed written comments on these guidelines, but I'd like to offer a few thoughts today on how some of the provisions might be applied in New England. In general, the Ocean Conservancy supports the criteria that are reported on today and described in this presentation. We agree that annual catch limits should be sufficiently below the overfishing thresholds as described in relating to overfishing levels. I think is a very useful concept to ensure that overfishing does not occur. Clearly, we also agree that information that National Marine Fisheries has on fishery status, the more precaution should be applied in setting OFLs, and that it's also clear, as described, that the concept of the buffer between OFL and ACLs is related to the performance history of an FMP. And I think that's a very important concept as we look at improvements to the groundfish plan. We agree that annual catch limits must account for all sources of mortality. not covered in this presentation today, but something we would like to see more guidance from the National Fisheries Service on how to apply annual catch limits to subcategories of stock structure. For example, age diversification and gender ratio play an important factor for management of some fish populations, and especially when we start moving into managing in an ecosystem context. We urge that annual catch limits not be set for stock assemblages or stock complexes. National Fisheries Service's own technical guidance notes that such management runs a high risk of allowing overfishing to occur on an individual stock within an assemblage. We believe that the National Fisheries Service should strike reference to the mixed stock exception from regulations because it is inconsistent with current law. We urge that accountability measures focus on ensuring that annual catch limits be designed to prevent overfishing in as close to real time as possible, as is reasonably possible. This is the preventative approach that you described in your presentation. Ideally, catch would be closely monitored in such an instance, and an annual catch limit, and as an annual catch limit is approached, there would be progressive triggers which would slow or close the fishery. And we understand there's a big cost to this. We understand that this is harder to do in some fisheries than in others. It may take years for us to really apply and perfect this in ground fish, as an example. Recognizing that such real-time monitoring may not be possible in the near term to satisfy the law, the alternative approach that's been discussed is to deduct overages from subsequent years' annual catch limits for a stock, and that's the corrective approach. Though we recognize that this may be a necessity in the near term in some instances, we would like to discourage this approach as a general management strategy for applying AAMs because it has the effect of compounding the challenge of achieving mortality goals in subsequent years. And that is the sort of chronic problem that we have seen in ground fish. You can imagine that if you had to apply two or three successive years of overages, constantly drawing down on an ACL, that you could end up with a situation where you would have very prohibitive restrictions that would not be consistent with good management policy. In the end, we would expect to see the Science and Statistical Committee vested with authority to apply the precautionary approach, both in the setting of the overfishing limits and in the setting of annual catch limits. The reason for this is that there is a different analysis of risk that needs to be applied in both instances. And in both instances, you need expert scientific background to be able to make the differentiation of when there are uncertainties in the stock assessment, such as we've seen with yellowtail, George Spank yellowtail. You know, it's the science team that's going to pick up on and understand those risks early enough to make adjustments early enough in setting an OFL. Similarly, it's a risk analysis in setting various that has to be done in various aspects of analysis for setting an annual catch limits. In both cases, you want that expert decision making to be coming from your science team, and that this council should then develop a relationship of consultation with its Science and Statistics Committee and use the Science and Statistics Committee as your conveyors from the excellent stock assessment process that has developed over years to the implementation process that is centered here. And finally, in consideration that in the future we're going to be seeing more emphasis on ecosystem-based management in fisheries, we would encourage that in the formation of this of science statistical committees for this region, that as much attention be paid to finding outstanding ecologists to serve, as well as population dynamic scientists, which is where we placed most of our emphasis now. But to see that the SSC is going to be dealing with issues in the future of relationships between species, and that these will have these will play into an aspect of setting appropriate ACLs in the future. So we need to build that expertise in at the beginning. Thank you very much.
Anyone else in the audience? Yes, sir.
Matt Rand with the National Environmental Trust. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. The National Marine Fisheries Service Notice of Intent is a positive attempt by the agency to create rules that will implement the Magnuson-Stevens Act and ensure that the new conservation provisions are enforced. We look forward to working with the agency and the council to resolve the difficult issues and end overfishing. I wanted to make a point about that. The new law states that the annual catch limit needs to ensure that overfishing does not occur. The rulemaking should result in clear, strong rules that ensure catch levels are based on scientific advice, end overfishing, and allow timely rebuilding of overfished fish stocks. We suggest, according to one of your questions, that you produce a full environmental impact statement. Developing the environmental impact statement will ensure a thorough evaluation of the new rule. Unlike an EA, an environmental impact statement requires a wide variety of experts to evaluate the environmental impacts of a range of fishery management alternatives, including the proposed rule. An environmental impact statement allows the public to review the impacts of these alternatives and participate in the decision-making process. On setting catch levels for managed species, to the extent possible, numeric catch, annual catch limits should be required for each federally managed stock in a fishery management plan. Without a yardstick, it's impossible to tell whether overfishing is occurring. And then on the ACLs, the ACL should be set below the OFL with enough of a buffer to ensure a high probability that OFL will not be exceeded. In a data poor situation, the greater the buffer should be between the ACL and the OFL. And then just a last comment here, moving toward an ecosystem fishery management. I know this is a difficult one, but what we're suggesting is getting engaged on this, looking at forage fish. One of the overarching recommendations from the U.S. Commission on Ocean Policy was a move toward ecosystem-based management approach. Such an approach would provide direct benefit to the ecosystem and create a better mechanism for addressing conflicts between socioeconomic and biological goals. The rules should take a step toward this goal by clearly identifying management of prey fish populations, which form the base of the ocean food chain, as a distinct and fundamentally different from standard fishery management. The rules should develop an alternative process to ensure sustainability of these species that are critical to the health of ocean fish and wildlife. And I wanted to applaud you, the council, at taking a first step at that and addressing the herring issue here in New England. Thank you.
Glenn Delaney.
Glenn Delaney, Northeast Seafood Coalition. I want to commiserate with our friends from NIMS many, many years ago. Things seemed a lot simpler when I was on staff and doing Magnuson. This is, you know, I hope everybody is as mind-boggled as I am here to think of all the different implications. Many of the points I wanted to make have been made, but I will mention a few. One that hasn't been mentioned, and I believe, I didn't imagine this, but in the notice of intent, it suggests that the agency will make a decision based on comments received whether to prepare an EI, an environmental assessment, or an EIS. And I don't know if that's still an open issue, but hopefully considering the magnitude of issues that have been raised here, and I'm sure in other regions, you'll find it appropriate to do a full DEIS and FEIS. You know, just a quick review of the CEQ's NEPA regulations for determining significant impact or no significant impact. It would seem that the criteria or issues to be considered are certainly met for a significant impact and that an EIS should be prepared. Another issue that Paul Howard stressed and others, I'm focused primarily on groundfish here, and, you know, we have a plan right now that covers 19 stocks at all different levels of data quality, if you will, and stock status. I believe there is consideration to expand that to more than 20 stocks at some point. The bottom line is if the agency or this council hopes to meet the new requirements of the Act with regard to overfishing and ACLs and AMs, we will have to fundamentally revamp the management approach from what we've got now, which is basically an effort input control system, to one of an output catch-based management system. Absent that, you know, I think we're going to have to so greatly restrict the fishery that we won't have a viable fishery from an economic perspective. And with that comes the need, of course, to have timely or real-time monitoring of landings and bycatch. And you need resources to do that. The current system that we have in place, you have people counting days at sea and trying to predict what catch might be. We've proven it's been a poor predictor of actual catch and fishing mortality. We've got horrible regulatory discard problems and waste. We probably leave as much optimum yield in the water as we put on the dock. We need to fix it. But with that, we'll be required a massive, essentially revamping or reconfiguration of converting our current monitoring system to one that is catch-based and much more timely. Particularly if we're going to have in-season management capabilities. And that's going to cost money. We, the Northeast Seafood Coalition, in anticipation of that, went ahead and submitted an appropriation request for FY08 to Congress, emphasizing that point. It was in the groundfish context, but I'm sure this would apply to all the fisheries. And I just want to call that to your attention. We've discussed it with the agency leadership as well and folks on the Hill. And want the council to be aware of that you know, we have got to convert the current system of counting effort and putting in trip limits to one that's real time and timely on the catch, on a catch basis. Kind of strikes on another issue, which is the Amendment 16 implementation schedule. And maybe I have a question for you guys. You talk about ending overfishing, the ACLs and their ending overfishing in 2010, as opposed to establishing a mechanism for specifying ACLs in 2010, which will prevent overfishing. So I guess my first question is, does Section 104B and related provisions essentially preempt Section 104C, which contemplates that the councils would need to implement a plan to end overfishing immediately 2 years from that identification, but that provision doesn't take effect until 30 months after enactment, which puts us at June 12th, I believe, 2009. And so, assuming that's the starting date, that overfishing would have to be ended immediately within that two-year period. So, which is it?
We still have to walk that through again with general counsel and the leadership. But our initial thinking at the staff level is that the one does trump the other in terms of by 2010, if you know if stock's undergoing overfishing right before that, you have to, that the one does trump the other in terms of end overfishing immediately.